This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
So, okay, so you did Midnight Madness this weekend.
Yeah, so I was in a mansion with mentalists that were doing a mentalism act, and on the main floor there was all these rigged Ouija boards that related to the mentalist act for a puzzle.
And did they work?
Yeah, it was so cool. Like, getting to watch everything was so awesome. And then going into the city and meeting all these magicians that do close-up magic, and there was an escape act, and we were doing some pretty dodgy, illegal things in the city for one of the puzzles. We had these magic wands that we gave groups that worked on turning on different things all over Alphabet City. So we were like going to a dumpling truck and hanging a marquee on it that they needed to use a magic wand to turn on, and going to a Postmobile's and spray painting it in blacklight paint and drilling a blacklight into a wall and hoping that the police didn't come. And like, there were so many different elements. They had to swim to a bottom of a swimming pool and like collect all these chains and keys. And it was just
They had to swim. I'm sorry. You broke out. You froze a little. Wait, they had to swim in a pool. Did you tell them to bring a swimsuit?
No, we provided old timey looking swimsuits because the theme was Houdini. So the suits looked like the men's old timey suits.
Yeah, like wool, where you're like, this is not helpful. Like, why are these made out of a knit?
Well,
fabric?
No, it was made out of regular material, but it was like the shorts and the overall kind of thing. Do you know, like the swimsuits?
Yes.
Yes. It was so cute. And we anticipated that all these groups would be anxious and be like, okay, so one of us has to do this. But instead, groups were showing up and all of them were jumping in the pool. Like, everyone wanted to get in. So our note to ourselves was buy more suits next time. We did not foresee that everyone was going to be like, I absolutely want to get in a swimming pool.
Did you worry that you were going to run out of suits?
We did run out
of suits. You did run out of suits. So what did groups do?
I think by the end, the final groups had to have like someone already in a suit help them. But it was really, really cool. Like, it went so well. There were so many cool puzzles. And then they took us out to dinner at a fun steakhouse last night and we had a private room, and it was very, and they just like were telling us crazy stories, my bosses, about the time that they almost went to prison in Pakistan, or did go to prison, but had to get like broken out by the consulate, and like all these crazy stories because they're such lunatics. And working with them is so fun because they take big risks. And I guess that's been a theme of their lives and their friendship. So they were telling like a story about being in the jungle and in the Amazon and trying to show the locals, like, you eat the fruit of these cashew trees, we eat the nut at the bottom. And the locals like shaking their head and being like, no. And being like, yes, we do. Not realizing that the cashew nut goes through all kinds of really important treatments so that it is not a caustic experience.
It's not deadly.
And one of my bosses bit into it to show them. And then minutes later was like, like mouth started burning, turned completely white. And he lost all his ability to taste for 2 weeks.
That reminds me of when I ate an olive out of an olive branch when I was in Portugal last year, because it was just like the most beautiful olive. It was like a plump green olive on these olive trees. And I was like, oh, this is going to be so good. And I put it in my mouth and it was the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted, because they go through like a pickling, brining process, olives. Like, totally. You don't just like eat them off a fucking tree.
Yeah, there's so many things like that we don't think about. I guess this cashew, they come inside a shell. You break the shell open, which looks like a bigger version of the cashew, and then the inside thing gets treated. But Ryan tried to just break open the shell with his mouth to get to it. And what he didn't know was that the kids cut open these cashew shells and use them on their skin to tattoo themselves. That is how caustic it is. that will release like an acid onto your skin that bleaches you. And he's eating it meanwhile. And they're like, this guy's lost his mind. But it was such a like, I will reach out to the locals and tell them what we do in America. And they're like, no, I mean, you don't.
The visual of white man comes in, tells locals what to eat is just a very funny
hysterical motif already. Like that.
That's really funny.
And the story about them going to Pakistan and like spending the night in prison.
Crazy.
And you're like, sure, they're going to be fine. And they almost ended up living there.
Well, you know, cheaper rent than all the things. That's crazy. What brought them out there?
They were making a documentary about women's education in Pakistan, which is not looked upon favorably. And it didn't occur to them that they would be, like, they went into an area that Americans are not allowed in. And it was very dodgy. And it was such a story about, like, we were idiots. We were in our 20s. We thought everything would be fine. We were invincible. And we definitely almost didn't make it out of prison. And we're very lucky to make it out of prison. And then,
oh my God,
very lucky to. And then they tell a story about this guy being like, we barely got you out. You need to lay low for 2 days and get on this flight. And he was like, you need to hire a car from the Marriott. Don't just pick a car. And they're like, but it's so expensive if you hire from the hotel. And they're like, you're going to get kidnapped and ransomed if you don't hire it from the Marriott. And they're like, okay. So then they're in the car and they haven't eaten in days because they were in prison. And they see a Domino's and they make the car pull over so they can get food. And it was like, they said it was like a movie. They went into the Domino's and they saw behind the counter a stack of newspapers and a picture of them was on the cover. So they bought all the newspapers.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Can you explain Midnight Madness to our listeners? Because they might not know.
Midnight Madness is a 14-hour puzzle hunt, multi-borough, that finance guys and tech people like buy teams, and the money goes to charity, to Good Shepherd. So it's like raising like over $1 million for charity, but instead of a gala, it's a puzzle hunt. And so all the money that would go to like, here's the ballroom and the entertainment and the food is actually going toward creating a very difficult themed hunt. This puzzle hunt, this year's theme was Houdini, and everything was related to magic and illusion and seances. And it was so cool.
Ugh, I love. That's very cool. I think I worked it 1 year as an actor.
Yeah, you were back
at the like conference or whatever.
At the conference, pretending to be a nut of some kind. A cashew nut. All right, you talk for a while.
Okay. I went out every night last week and my body said, Carrie. Stop it. Mm-hmm. My body is revolting. My body is saying, Carrie, no. So I saw Ginger Twinsies last week, which is a Parent Trap, which was a parent trap parody, which is so fun. Mm-hmm. And it was really great. It was super duper fun. And then I saw, okay, that was on Monday. Then I went to a 10 p.m. softball party where it was the end of the season party at an Italian restaurant. That was super fun. Then Wednesday, I got tickets for free to go see Renee Rapp at Atlantic Barclays Center. So I just got to go to a fun concert. It was so, my favorite part was she's a really skilled musician, singer. She's very talented. I was like, by far, some of the oldest people there, which is fine. I still love to have a good time. I'll step, touch, and dance my little heart away. But the best was she's talking in the show, and she's like, I think a friend breakup is worse than a romantic breakout because the betrayal is so real.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
She was like, and I wrote this song when I was 22, and I'm 25 now. And in the 3 years, like, I've learned so much, and it was probably like the funniest thing I've ever heard, but I loved it. I really loved it because I felt her truth in that like she has changed. But it was so great because I loved her big feelings about how life has changed for her in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And also, as someone significantly older, I just kind of looked and I was like, the feelings are valid. The feelings are real. You're in your early 20s. It was really fun. And then I did like a real switch. My friend from home was here for work, so she stayed with me this weekend. Mm-hmm. And what was amazing is I went and saw this Renee Rapp show Wednesday night. Thursday night, I get invited to my friend who's turning 64, her birthday party, which was a Cher cover show at Joe's Pub. And it was, I sat next to truly not the opposite of who I sat next to at Renee Rapp. And it was hilarious. And also, it was fine. And then we sang karaoke. I went out to dinner Friday. So it was just like, we had busy, it was busy times. And then I woke up and I was like, I am sick.
I sang karaoke on Friday too.
I sang karaoke on Thursday. I did a piano bar.
We did a private room.
Sid's Gold piano bar.
We did a Korean private room.
I'm just like, my body woke up on Saturday and was like, girlfriend, you gotta chill. So I chilled. And then I saw last night One Battle After Another, the Paul Thomas Anderson film, which is so good.
I don't know that movie. What was it about? One Battle After Another?
One battle after another. It goes battle, and then it goes, and then another battle, and then another battle, and then another battle. It's a really relevant film for today's time. It's so good. It's with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's mm-hmm. with Regina Hall. It's with Tiana Taylor. The acting was so good. It was with Sean Penn, who's plays such a good villain. He's so fucking good. Benicio del Toro is in it. It's like such a stacked cast. It's so good. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend. Everybody's freaking out about it. And I saw it and it was great. It was so good. Yeah. So let's thank a Patreon. Let's thank Kimberly. Kimberly, Kimberly, you are Kimberly, 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 Kimberly. We have some Wi-Fi problems, so I don't know what's happening.
Me neither.
Kimberly, you are so sleazy. Not really true. You're such Ooh. A fun and you please me. Kimberly, you are fun in the life of today. And we think you should have a cake. Not pie, too. But cake. And eat it too. Because Kimberly, you are so swimmingly enjoying life. Why was that so hard? My brain isn't working. And that's actually the truth. And
I couldn't give that anything right now. It feels like both of us. I'm like low-key afraid.
I feel like both of us are pretty run down. Is that the truth of the matter?
Extremely run down. And Monday, as you know, is always my COVID day.
I know. And do you think you have it?
For sure.
I mean, I don't know if this is allergies or a cold. You know that feeling? Because like the weather, although this weekend, wow, last week we had some beautiful weather. It was like perfect. And then this hot got hot. But my body, I don't know if I'm coming down with a cold, which you might hear me sound nasally, or it's just allergies. I don't know. It's a real mystery to me.
That's my Monday, every Monday.
Kind of fun. Kind of fun. Does she have COVID?
I feel like we're operating on borrowed time, so let's do a couple stories.
I do too. All right. By the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily. I'm Carrie Ipama.
I'm Quinlan Posner.
And I'm going to tell you a story I learned. I got information from Wikipedia and People. I'm taking you to Pocatello, Idaho. It's September 22nd, 2006, and 16-year-old Cassie Jo Stoddard, she's a junior in high school at Pocatello High School. Pocatello High School.
It's easy for you to say.
It's not, is really the TLDR, not easy for me to say. So she's a junior in high school, and her aunt and uncle are leaving for the weekend, and they're like, Cassie, do you want to house sit for us? Which is really exciting. I mean, she's 16 years old, she has a boyfriend. And so her aunt and uncle are out of town, and she's responsible for the pets that weekend. I know they have a dog, they might have more, but I know they have at least one dog. And so she's got the rule of the house, which is very exciting. Me, just as a sidebar, me, when I was her age and I'd be dog sitting, or my parents were out of town, I had this distinct memory of I was dating a guy, or not dating. I was like, there was a boy who liked me and I liked him. And we can ask him because now he's married to one of my close friends. But we were like, we had a crush on each other, and I was house sitting for my parents, or I was home alone, Kevin McAllister style, for my parents. And he called me. He's like, so your parents are out of town. Like, do you want me to come over? And I was like, you know, no boys are actually allowed.
Wow.
No boys are allowed. And the irony of this, and he remembers this, is that my best friend Nick was in the background talking, and he heard Nick. And listen, spoiler alert, Nick was not interested in me, and he will never be interested in me in that way. But that's how fearful I was of boys. Is like, I was like, I'm sorry, you actually can't come over.
There's a rule about that.
Even though
that.
I have, there's a rule and you're not invited. I still am. Honestly, still am afraid of men and boys. Okay. So around 6 o'clock.
Kept her alive.
It's what's kept me alive and single. Both of which are true.
It's a high-low kind of thing.
High risk, high reward. Low risk, high reward. I mean, if you don't keep men around your life, you won't get hurt. That's not true.
You won't get
hurt physically and emotionally. And you won't get, and you know what? You won't have a family. And that's actually the truth. You got to be. and that's safety. You can, hey, for future safety tips, AMA, ask me anything. It's around 6 o'clock at night, and she invites her boyfriend, Matt Beckham, to come over. And then later, two other guys come over, which feels like too many people, but maybe she was like me and she was like, no, more people should come. So she invites her friends, Brian Lee Draper and Tori Michael Adamczyk, to come over. And so they're all at the house hanging out. She ends up giving the two new attendees a house tour. She's like, here's the basement, here's the kitchen. You know, it's like MTV Cribs style. And so then they decide to watch a movie, and they watch Kill Bill. But Brian and Tori are like, you know what? Actually, I'd want to go to I want to see another movie at the movie theater instead. So I'm out of here. So the two guys leave, and then it's Matt and Cassie together at the house, and the lights start flickering in a weird way. Like the lights, all the power goes off for a little while, and then it comes back on. There's stories about the dog that she's watching, like sitting by the basement, sort of like growling, mm-hmm. and like pacing and looking anxious around the basement door. They do not go down to the basement. They're like, no, that's not my business. I'm not interested. And so Cassie's like pretty freaked out, and her boyfriend's there. And so he's like, maybe I can call and ask my mom if I could just stay the night if you're freaked out. And so he calls his mom, and he's like, mom, can I stay over at this house, this empty house that my girlfriend is house sitting for her aunt and uncle? And his mom is like, so no, that's not a solution. However, she's like, hey, she can come over to our house. I can pick you both up. You can come back to our house, and I can drop her off in the morning. And Cassie's like, I'm dog sitting. I'm watching these. I can't leave the house. Fine. So Matt gets picked up by his mom. He goes home for the night. What we know is that 2 days later, Cassie is found at the house with over 37 stab wounds in her body, and she is dead.
Who did it?
So the police start an investigation. Just so you know, like, this obviously is absolutely devastating to this community. She is a 16-year-old girl.
That's sad.
500 people will attend her funeral. The first person they suspect is Cassie's mom's boyfriend, and it's because they had heard of the lights going on and off. They had heard this story, and they said maybe someone, or even the dog, like maybe someone was trying to lure her to the basement. We don't know where this person was. So they do a sweep for prints, and they find her mom's boyfriend's fingerprints on the circuit breaker. Mm-hmm. And so they investigate what's going on. But there is a legitimate reason, and that is that he actually did some electric work for the house months prior. So he's cleared. Then, of course, they think it's the boyfriend, right? And so they start to investigate Matt Beckham, as he's the last person to see her alone. But his mom will corroborate that when she picked him up, she heard Cassie's voice in the house. And in addition, they're like, well, is mom really a trustworthy person?
Yeah.
They give him a polygraph test, and ultimately his alibi does check out. And then when Matt gives a series of events of what happened that night, they realize, oh, these other two guys, Brian and Tori, are there, right? So they bring in Brian and Tori, and they ask them about the series of events of the night. They get a tour. They watch Kill Bill. They say they want to leave. They want to go to a movie. And then they're like, well, what movie did you see? And they're like, oh, we saw the movie Pulse at the movie theater nearby. And then they were like, oh, can you tell us about what happened in the movie? And they were like,
And then they just name everything that happens in the trailer.
They like couldn't say any details about the movie. And the police were like, oh, that's fucking suspicious. And so then they're like, well, no. Actually, we didn't go to the movie. You caught us. We were going through cars in the area. We were like making sure they weren't open or whatever. And then Brian, not long after, will eventually confess that it was him and Tori who did it. But Brian would downplay his role. Once the police start investigating further, they find a video. They find a video that Brian and Tori made that details the plan to murder, that details their plan to murder Cassie and other classmates because of their obsession with Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, the boys who committed the heinous mass shooting in Columbine, who we all know. And they also were obsessed with Scream, with horror movies and things like that. And so in this video, but it was
to be fair, I'm obsessed with Scream. I don't kill anybody about it.
Yes. Again, I don't think it's like a video game. Like they played a video game. Like these people were sick and they wanted to explore this, and they have this on video, and it will be later showed at their trial. So what we know about these two guys, Brian and Tori, is they met when they were sophomores at Pocatello High School. They bonded over movies and they often would make their own films, which is why we have this footage. And the reason we found this footage is because one of them admitted to burning their clothes and burning all the stuff from the crime. Mm-hmm. And when the police went to this burn location, they found a partially burned VHS tape, which has them describing and even taking videos of Cassie at school and being like her friend, knowing that they were going to explore these like horrific killings.
Oof.
And so actually in their sights, they said that they decided that Cassie and Matt, their friend, would be the first of their victims. That's how they planned it. Mm-hmm. They bought knives from a pawn shop. They spent like $45 on knives. And so they went to visit the house. And when Cassie gave them a tour, including of the basement, they took that opportunity and they unlocked the basement door. And so by the time they watched the movie, the guys did leave. And they left, then they returned to the neighborhood, parked down the street. They got out of the car. They put on dark clothes. They put on gloves. They put on painted masks. They enter through the basement of this house while Matt and Cassie are watching TV upstairs. The two start making loud banging noises to try and lure them downstairs, but they do not come. Then they start to flip off the circuit breaker and turn off the power, hoping that they would come downstairs and check out what's happened. Cassie and Matt do not come downstairs, as I tell you. Cassie, like I said, is freaked out. And this whole thing happens where they call Matt's mom. They never go down into the basement, and Matt leaves at 10:30 at night. So Cassie is now home alone. After Matt leaves, what's wild is he ends up calling Brian and Tori. And he's like, what are you guys up to? And hears them whispering. So he assumes they're at the movie. But in reality, they're in the basement of the house waiting for Cassie. When Cassie's alone, they again turn off the circuit breaker, turn off the power in the house to try and lure her down. She does not come downstairs. They keep just trying to lure her downstairs, which honestly, like I remember being a babysitter and there was a horrible story of someone tapping the pipes hoping to lure the babysitter downstairs. And so that's always been like, it's like an urban legend. I don't know if anybody's heard it. Yeah. Do you remember the story of the dog licking the person's hand and it turns out to be a killer? Yeah. Remember we talked about that? Totally. This is the same one where I remember a story of being a babysitter and someone calling or hearing the pipes. And it's like, go check the pipes. And the babysitter doesn't. And then later we find out that there was a man banging the pipes downstairs. But this is very much like what's happening. It's this young girl alone and they're trying to lure, and these guys are trying to lure her into the basement. So fucking scary. And so she does not come downstairs, which props to Cassie, but it's no match for these boys' plans. They come upstairs armed with knives. Brian opens and slams the closet door to scare her. And keep in mind, these guys are in all black and they're dressed in masks. So how fucking scary. She is on the couch in the living room, and that's when they attack her. They stab her a total of 37 times, and 12 of these would be potentially fatal. So we do not know what was the fatal blow. Mm-hmm. They were arrested not long after. They were arrested September 27th, 2006, and they were both charged with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Mm-hmm. The two of them, in the process of this, start blaming each other. They downplay their own role. They keep outing each other. This is when they lead investigators to Black Rock Canyon, where they will find partially burned clothes, masks, weapons, including the VHS tape. At the trial, the prosecution will bring up the Columbine obsession, as well as how much they loved horror movies and wanted to recreate it in real life, and how there were multiple other victims planned. They presented a document that was written by Brian, which said, "I am becoming more and more obsessed with Columbine. It seems now that's all I think about. I would give anything to go back in time and be a part of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold's lives. They are my heroes. I will follow in their footsteps, and maybe I'll even meet them." Both of them were convicted of first-degree murder. Each received a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole. In addition, because of the conviction of conspiracy to commit murder, they also got an additional 30 years to life. Both are serving at Idaho State Correctional Institution. I do not know if they are separated, but my assumption is they must be.
Yeah, they're definitely not like, do you want a roommate? Do you want to plan some murders in this prison?
Insane. Tori has tried to appeal. There's been a couple of appeals mm-hmm. in the process. They've been fortunately denied. Mm-hmm. The two of them have been dubbed the Scream Killers. Brian will later say that he regrets it every day of his life, which, okay, sure, that doesn't bring back this young, beautiful 16-year-old girl. Cassie's brother will say, "It affected all of us in different ways. We all had different things that bothered us. It took us years before we could even talk about it. All of us are really torn up about it and still are. It's mm-hmm. something we have to live with." And that is the story of Cassie Jo Stoddard and her untimely, tragic end.
Really sad. And I'm really sad they were given that moniker because I hate that they would probably love it.
Well, it feels like a little bit, like, I think their obsession was these mass shooters, which we know there are a lot of copycats. It's like mm-hmm. we have an epidemic here in the U.S. where it's people are hearing about other perpetrators of mass shootings, and we see copycats all the time. Mm-hmm. And we don't, and like the attention-seeking behavior, like all of this stuff. But of course, the Scream Killers is like a more exciting, salacious.
Yeah.
Part of it. Yeah.
I'm going to tell a story to you. I got from Medium, Today, New York Times, and Netflix. In November of 2011, in Queens, there was a trial of a man named Jerry Ramritan. And I could be saying his name wrong. I didn't watch the Netflix documentary. I just read quotes from it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to pronounce anyone's name. I'm really tired. Sorry.
We forgive you, Quid.
Thank you. He's being convicted of rape and perjury. And he says people are portraying him to be some sort of animal, which isn't fair. It isn't true. And then he says, if I'm a schemer and a liar, why did they allow me to do all those cases then? What he's talking about is his longtime secret role as a confidential source for law enforcement. So he worked for a bunch of law enforcement agencies, NYPD, the Brooklyn DA, the Queens DA. Sometimes they paid him, sometimes he didn't. And he's like, they can't call me a liar because then they would have to do so much damage control on those cases because I was testifying for grand juries and I was helping all those people win convictions. I've been doing this for years. I've done hundreds of cases. So don't call me a liar or you're calling yourselves out. Just as an example, there was a 1997 rape case where he testified and he was paid $4,000 for his testimony. There was a Brooklyn case having to do with the Sweet Cherry strip club in 2005. He worked as a paid undercover operative in that case, supposedly, and infiltrated a group where they were laundering money. They were promoting prostitution and he infiltrated that group and became an informant. But right now, in 2011 because of this trial, all of these law enforcement agencies are trying to be like, we don't know that guy. We're not friends with that guy. We don't want to talk about that guy. And it's for a pretty good reason that they're doing that, which is that he, because of this conviction that's come out, there's a lot of questions about his credibility. So they're not really wanting to showcase their partnership with him. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you now about this case, which has to do with a woman named Simona Sumazar, who was born in Guyana and is the oldest of three children. This family immigrates to Queens. She's 11 at the time. Her dad is really hardworking. He's an entrepreneur. She looks up to him and she's like, you're working so many jobs. You're supporting this family. I'm going to do the same. So she is double timing it. She's pursuing a career in finance. And after going to college, she gets a job at Morgan Stanley and is working on Wall Street. But also in 2006, she opens up her own Golden Crest Caribbean bakery franchise in Queens. So she's during the day at Morgan Stanley, during the afternoon and evening managing restaurant.
Wow.
And she's a single mother. So she is Reba. She's incredible. Amazing.
She's fucking incredible.
And she meets Jerry in 2006. He's visiting one of the Golden Crests. She's there. They end up chatting. He's buying food. And her first impressions of him are that he's wearing a suit and he's carrying a gun. And he says to her, well, I'm a detective. I work for the Brooklyn DA. So he seems very credible right from the start. You can see where she would trust him. And he's offering to do all these side gigs for her to help her. He has a personality that's like, let me help you. Let me fix your broken restaurant camera. Let me just try to help you in all these ways. So they first become friends and then it becomes romantic. And her niece says that the whole family really looked up to him and thought he's a great guy. He has a career in law enforcement and he's helping our daughter in all these ways. It never occurs to them that there's already been some deceptions. An example would be that he says he was also born in Guyana. He says he was also born in Guyana. Guyana. That's not Ghana. That's Ghana.
Yeah, I think that's Guyana. Guyana. Sure.
But he's really born in Trinidad. So he's just like lying to the family from the get-go to gain their trust. And I don't think it's the long con, by the way. I just think this guy's very comfortable telling lies.
He just likes
to lie. He's just like a guy he's a little bit con artisty, but not in the long con way. Just in the, I feel like it's one of those things where someone just asks him a question. And he says what he thinks they want to hear without thinking much further down the line. An example of saying things that people want to hear so that you get what you want is that Simona finds out he actually has a family and that's why they break up.
Ooh. Yeah. Fear. New fear unlocked.
Married, three children. And she's like, I'm out. And it's really interesting because he must not be on great terms with that family because they break up in 2008. And he says, I just need to stay in your basement for a few weeks. And she lets him. But it turns into months instead of weeks.
We got squatter's rights. Got to be careful.
So in March of 2009, they have a big fight where she is demanding that he leave. His response to this fight, according to her, is that he duct tapes her mouth shut and drags her into the basement and holds her captive there. While he's holding her captive, he's ordering Chinese food. He's watching TV. He's pulling out his gun and putting it to his own head. I don't know the background on that, to freak her out, I guess. Or maybe to say, like, if you don't, let me do this. And then it culminates in him starting to take off his clothes and she's begging and she's crying and he rapes her. After he rapes her, he says, oh, I'm so sorry. I never meant for this to happen. He starts crying and apologizing. And then eventually leaves her home. She goes upstairs. She makes herself some tea. She showers. She calls 911. She says, here's what just happened to me. Mm-hmm. And in the court case, they play that 911 call, which is very upsetting. He then sends a bunch of people in from his life to go to Golden Crest and find her and be like, you need to drop these charges. Like, don't charge him with rape. You're going to mess up his life. Don't do this.
Fuck you.
Intimidating her. And when she continues with her, the case, the next thing that happens to her is she gets pulled over by the police and thrown in jail. And they say, you're a serial robber. And she's like, I'm a serial robber. And they're like, yes, there's been a lot of witnesses accusing you of robbing them at gunpoint while dressed as a police officer. And she's like, that's not me. You got it wrong.
You got the
wrong.
She
says, and by the way, I bet Jerry's behind it just because this is so crazy and he's so crazy. That's my guess. You guys know Jerry. Everybody knows Jerry because he's an informant and he gets paid by you. He's probably on your payroll. And they're like, we don't believe you. This has nothing to do with him. You need to drop it. So she gets indicted in June 2010 on counts of robbery, grand larceny, criminal use of a firearm, and criminal impersonation. And she's facing 25 years in prison, and they set her bail at $1 million. So she can't get out of prison. And she has a kid, and she's in prison for 7 months. Her kid's 12. Like, this is not okay.
Oh, my God.
Three different people have accused her of robbing them at gunpoint between September 2009 and May of 2011. There's a guy named Terrell Lavelle who reported that there was a man and woman pretending to be police officers and robbed him and says, here's the partial license plate of the getaway car. And then there's an anonymous caller that calls and says the same thing and says, I don't want to formally be reporting this, but I can give you the full license plate of the car. And they give it. And it's Simona's sister's license plate. So then they go to the first person with this anonymous one and they say, here's a picture of the sister. Is this the person dressed as a cop that robbed you? And Lavelle is like, no, that's not the person that robbed me. And then a few days after that, a third person comes forward, Luz Johnson, and says, I was robbed on Long Island by a woman and man impersonating police officers, and identifies Simona. So it feels like this thing where it's like person A has the partial and then nothing happens. Right. So then they have to like turn it up a notch and be like, here's the full plate. And then they have to turn it up another notch and be like, will ID Simona? But she finally gets released in 2010 because an informant calls the police, the district attorney, and says she's been framed. They look into it, and two of those witnesses, the ones that weren't anonymous, are like, yeah, we made up that story. We were getting paid off by Jerry to do it.
What a piece of shit. What a piece of shit.
He pleads not guilty, says that's not so, but the charges against him are rape, perjury, conspiracy. And she's saying, I told you it was this guy 7 months ago. I told you it was him before. Nobody listened to me. Nobody even looked into it. And now he's also accusing me of mortgage fraud. He's going to come after me any way he can. He's not somebody that stops. And then when she has her day in court, she gets to say to the jury, look, I was separated from my kid for 7 months. My mother was sick while I was there and I couldn't take care of her. My house went into foreclosure. I lost my businesses because I wasn't there to manage them. This was not like a 7 month standalone event and now I'm out and everything's fine. It ruined my life to be in prison for 7 months. Yeah. And it was all because this guy was trying to intimidate me to not accuse him of raping me, which he did. Ugh. He, at the time when they're in trial, is just like, won't make eye contact with her. He's smirking. He's so shitty. These three witnesses come forward during the trial and they're like, yep, he staged all of this. It was fake. He showed us pictures of her, said to say it was her. He showed us pictures of her so in case they did a police lineup, we could pick her out of it. He gave us thousands of dollars to frame her for these non-events that he constructed in his mind. They get three people that accused her. They get charged for that and they plead guilty to perjury. They're sentenced to anywhere from 6 months. They're sentenced to being in prison 6 months. But then, no, jail. I guess it would be jail. And then 4 years of probation. Jerry, after the trial, gets 32 years. He's eligible for parole in December of 2031. But he has to serve a minimum sentence of 21 years, 5 months, and 2 days. And for her, for Simona, she's like, I was very glad when he was sentenced as guilty because it felt like I'm vindicated. Like, told you this was happening, but also it was so frustrating because I told you this was happening the minute you arrested me.
The minute, and then the amount of time she lost, the amount of like time.
So in 2011, she and her daughter, Chiara, sue the Nassau County police detectives that arrested her. And that lawsuit gets settled for $2 million, like 6 years later, like pretty 2017. And she says it wasn't about the money. I didn't care what the dollar, what the ending dollar sign ended up being. I didn't even want to be really in that lawsuit in the sense that I just wanted it to be over and behind me. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to be vindicated. Like, I wanted to win. I wanted you guys to admit that this was fucked.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of lawsuits, we're not surprised that Jerry's litigious. In 2012, he complains saying that he has experienced religious discrimination while he was at Rikers, and those claims are dismissed. And then 9 years later in 2021, he files another claim against the state of New York saying he didn't get adequate accommodations for his visual and hearing impairments. And that's also dismissed. It's so him, isn't it? To like find some things to try to complain about, just to like stir the pot and like try to think of something. Like, I feel like he's just in there reading about other cases and being like, huh, I'll try it. Meanwhile, it's interesting. The Brooklyn DA is like, we're not going to talk about it. But if these claims that he is a person that fabricates things, if they raise any legal issues for us, we're going to look into it, we promise. But then there's this attorney that spoke out. I'm not sure if this quote's from Netflix, I forget, but this attorney was like, given the sophistication of what he was doing and given the extensive nature involving other people of what he was doing, every case needs to be reinvestigated.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that everybody he helped convict is an innocent person, but it's a huge warning sign. Danger, danger. You have to go back to the very beginning. And that's what this attorney Kubi says of this. And I just was like haunted by it, where it's so true that if you look at this person, did not think twice when they felt threatened.
Yeah.
They bribed people to help them put an innocent person in prison. That's what they did. And now we go, okay, there's a history of you working on reportedly hundreds of cases with different departments, getting different people put away and infiltrating groups. It's just impossible to know. Your testimony right away is not reliable, but now we also know that it was second nature to you to bribe people to lie to get the job done, and you were being given money when you worked on these cases. It feels very dirty. It feels impossible to think that there's not some misdeeds behind this, and that we just can't. And now, are they going to do it is the question. Like, we don't, I don't know what the oversight is on the Brooklyn DA, the Queens DA, on these, on them going back and looking at the cases that Jerry Ramerton had a hand in and really investigating, like, how much of our evidence came from this person.
Right.
And what was he paid? What did he stand to gain when someone else went to prison? And what was his role? And it almost feels like this stack of paperwork would be impossible. And reinvestigating all those cases in a really fair way would be impossible. And it makes you really think about how many innocent people might be serving time, or people that just didn't get a fair shake, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's really alarming.
That's really sad and scary.
It just like takes one crooked cop or one crooked informant, and it could be like the repercussions could be so enormous.
I know. And they all protected that guy. And I mean, I obviously you told the story from the person who like ended up getting him out, which is great. But like, I just am thinking of like, this is a woman who worked at, you know, in the financial district, had a restaurant and was a single mother, and like, $1 million bail and let had her just sit in jail. It's just vile. Like, what happened? Like, her kid, her like, and $2 million, and like it's like it not even
that
much.
Like, in terms of evidence, it just didn't seem like it took that much. And they're
protecting
that, like,
their own because they knew it's a house of cards. If one caves, then they're fucked. The DA,
and one
like,
of these articles was like, he came up with a plan that was like the plot line of Law and Order, like just like it's so cartoonish to be like, I'll just say she did this. There's no proof except the three people I'm paying to say it. And it worked. I mean, it didn't work ultimately, but
That's an insane story. Thank you for telling it.
You're welcome. I guess we both have to go.
I gotta
sign on to Knowledge is Power. All right.
Knowledge is power, and let that be a lesson for us all.
Have a great day, and I'm really proud of you, and I hope you have really good lunch breaks this week that you give yourself.
Was that to me or to our listeners?
To you.
Oh, Quinn. It's
not, but not you guys, but can not too, just for, but it's not Carrie's exclusive. Starting her new full-time gig, so it's about her. Sorry.
Hey, Quinn, I hope you learn a lot. I hope the information is robust and you're curious and interested, and I hope you don't have COVID.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.